The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this December 5th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to on the show today. We've got college basketball to recap from what was an amazing night of college basketball last night. Even though the Auburn game did not go the way we wanted it to, it was still a really, really entertaining game. Huge games on the board last night, so we're going to recap a bunch of those for you today. Also, we need to talk the college football playoff, because we did not get a chance to do that yesterday. I said we would do it today, and we will do it today. We're also going to talk with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, who was part of the broadcast last night for Auburn and Duke. He was not in Cameron Indoor, but he was in the studio, so we're going to be able to talk to him about that. Put a bow on football season for now, right, with the end of the regular season, with the Iron Bowl, National Signing Day, and then the portal that opens up next week on December 9th. So we'll talk to Brad Law about that coming up in just a little bit. And then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will be with us in hour number two as well. Looking forward to talking to him about the playoffs and SEC championship game, who he thinks is going to be into the playoffs, right? We got a lot to get to on the show today. And I say we because I'm not alone. Typically, I am on Thursdays, but I'm not today. I asked this guy to come in. I'm still getting back to 100%. We're trying to get there. Seems like everybody's got something going on now. I mean, it just seems to be going around. But Christian Griffin in the studio with me as well, voice of the Lee Scott Warriors. What's up, my man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, something's going around the entire Auburn Opelika area, getting everybody. It got you pretty hard over the past couple of days. Feels like you're slowly on the uphill.
Slowly. But slowly.
Still, I think it got me a couple of days before you, so we're all getting over a little bit of everything, but excited to have woken up to the text of, hey, you want to come on today? And I was like, of course. I mean, I'm going to be up there anyways with Lee Scott. Mm-hmm. Basketball playing tonight. We'll head over there right after the show ends this afternoon. But talking a lot of college football playoff, as you were talking about, talking a lot of Auburn basketball. And again, what a slate, regardless of the final score from Cameron Indoor. What a slate, what a dominant SEC performance in the SEC-ACC Challenge.
Yeah, I mean, they literally clinched the challenge on day one.
Yeah.
They clinched it on day one. They were up 9-1. SEC lost two total games from two teams that on any given night you would expect to be two of the best in the SEC. Kentucky losing to Clemson on night one and Auburn losing to Duke on night two. Those were the only two SEC teams to fall. Everybody else won in the challenge. I mean, it was truly dominant. Was it 14-2? Was that the final tally for the SEC-ACC Challenge, the inaugural, the first SEC-ACC Challenge, and was dominated by the Southeastern Conference?
They are, and the girls going on tonight as well. I know the Auburn women's team are taking on Virginia at Virginia tonight.
Here on ESPN.
But what a great slate. We also had the, was it the Big Ten, Big East matchup?
It was the Big East, Big 12.
Big 12, that's right. Yeah, that was going on at the exact same
time. Which is awesome in itself.
You got home from work and you had four or five games that you could flip back and forth from each of the past two nights. Absolutely fantastic midweek basketball. You hear all about the Sonic blockbusters. That wasn't necessarily the label of everything, but man, it sure felt like it.
Yeah, and so I want to get a full recap of Auburn and Duke, of course, and some of the other games and what this means for the Southeastern Conference, what it means for Auburn moving forward with five games remaining in the non-conference schedule before they get into SEC play. Auburn goes on the road last night in a top 10 game at Cameron Indoor. It was the highlight of all of the games yesterday and really in this week. I mean, everybody in the country was watching Auburn and Duke do battle. Top 10 matchup, second-ranked Tigers, ninth-ranked Blue Devils, and the Tigers fall 84-78, their first loss of the season. We're going to get into it and break it all down. We'd love to hear from you. Easiest way right now is the text box, 334-784-1067. You can also give us a call, 334-321-1390, and the phone lines as well. Auburn falls 84-78, and there's several tiers to this, right? There's several notes to make.
E-A-R-S.
Yeah, good one. Took me a second, but yes, both. Multiple tiers last night and multiple tiers to this conversation today. And I think the way to start is to give my just initial thoughts as we are, you know, not 24 hours removed, but the next day. And I even thought this after the game last night. You and I were together. We watched it. And as much as it pains us to watch this team lose, right, this Auburn team, because of how good they are, how good they're going to be, and the talent that they have and the stage that this was on, it's okay. Like, it's okay. Losing's not okay. I don't like to lose, and I'm not saying that, oh, yeah, the sunshine and rainbows, and we should just accept a loss to Duke because they're really good and they're a big brand. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the way that it happened and the fact that Auburn still had a fighter's chance at the end of this thing, some would say it's a miracle given how the game played out with everything, and we're going to get to that. But overall, this was a really fun game. I mean, this was everything you wanted it to be for Auburn's second ever time playing at Cameron Indoor. The first time was back in the 80s. And so overall, this was a really, really fun game, and we're going to get to all the details, but it was very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, if you were a basketball fan that didn't necessarily care about the outcome of the game and just wanted to watch great basketball, that's exactly what you got. And it's such a cool thought that we've always watched great teams either from Duke or go into Duke and play, and we've always watched from a distance of, man, how cool is it that they're getting the 9 o'clock ESPN game where everybody's tuned in. And then you got to watch Auburn play on the main stage in Cameron Indoor in a trip that Jimmy Dykes was talking about to where, I mean, all of these Auburn kids grew up watching Duke and wanting to go play inside one of the, you could say, top two, top three most historic venues in college basketball.
What is that tier list? I would say it's Cameron Indoor, man. Allen Fieldhouse, Assembly Hall at Indiana, the Dean Dome at North Carolina. Yeah. I would say, I'd say UCLA.
Would you throw Purdue in there?
Nah, I don't know.
Maybe not of
Mackey.
All time, more recently.
Maybe more recently, Mackey Arena, sure.
Rupp, you could say.
Oh, yeah, Rupp, yeah, for sure. Which I've been to Rupp. I'm very blessed to say I've been
to
Rupp.
But other than that, you feel like you're taking a big step down.
Yeah, like I said, UCLA back in the day. But yeah, then at that point, you're starting I'd love to hear from our audience. Shoot us a text, your all-time college basketball venues, 334-784-1067. Continue your thoughts.
You could even say the Maui Invitational.
Absolutely.
That arena
absolutely
is one of the most historic venues in all of college basketball, which is such a weird thing.
Right.
It's not a home venue, but it's such a cool such a
and
cool
then you start talking
play.
Like Madison Square Garden and right. places like that too, sure.
But again, the fact that Bruce Pearl comes here 10 years ago and now in 10 years has Auburn on the main stage, in the limelight, where teams are wanting you to come play against them because they think that you're one of the best teams in college basketball. If you did not care about any final score that happened last night, what a game that it had. You even had John Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies tuning in and a couple other guys in the NBA coming in and tweeting about Auburn players. Ja Morant tweeted out and said, man, Pettiford is nice. And
oh, we're gonna get
so
there.
People like that to, again, where he didn't care who won the basketball game, but people like that who tuned in and got the national media attention of Auburn basketball, what a cool moment for Auburn.
When you say that it's been a decade that it's taken, in quotes, that long for Auburn to get to this point, some on the outside would say, that's a long time. A decade, 10 year, and this is year 11 now going into it for Bruce Pearl. Like, this is, that's a long time. Yes, absolutely. But from where Auburn was, right, and everybody knows that, that goes without saying, that Auburn was in such a bad spot for so long that it is cool to see that. And look, I'm very, very vocal about at this point, and I was this way last year in the Jabari year. Like, I've been this way, very vocal on the radio and in regular conversation. It's not for show that I'm past the, what is it? What do you take after a wedding? Where do you go? What's the trip?
The honeymoon?
Yes.
The honeymoon phase
is
over.
Yes, I'm past the honeymoon phase of what a cool experience. Wow, it's great to see Auburn doing cool things. We've never been here. I'm tired of that.
That and the, man, well, at least they didn't give up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've been past the honeymoon stage of Auburn basketball being relevant in college basketball, and I've made that very, very clear. But last night, I do put an exception to that for just a second, because at the very beginning of the game, looking on TV, listening on radio, and just seeing the fact that Auburn was the center of college basketball in the heart of college basketball, that was really, really cool. And for those that got to make the trip, shout out to the Auburn fans that made that trip.
Oh, we heard you.
You were loud, you were there, and you made a difference, which was really, really cool to see. I know local media, some of those guys got to go. That's a once-in-a-lifetime trip. I talked to Dylan Cardwell earlier today for Tiger Takes, and he grew up a Duke fan and said he wanted to play for Duke, and he said this was a literal once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for him to play in that stadium. And so for the people that got to make that trip, shout out to you. I wish I could have done it. I'm mad that I didn't. It obviously didn't work out that way, but I do put an exception to that for a few minutes because it was really, really cool to see Auburn in that setting. Now, once the ball tipped off, all that goes away. Yes. I don't care about that.
No.
Because Auburn is a really good basketball team, and Auburn, I still believe, after the result last night, is the better basketball team. You put those two teams on neutral site 10 games in a row, I think Auburn wins 6, possibly 7, against that Duke team. But being on the road, in Cameron Indoor, with the Cameron Crazies, who had the biggest student body for a non-conference game in the history of Duke basketball at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Think about that for a second.
And they came to watch Auburn.
They came to watch the second-ranked team in the country, your Auburn Tigers. Auburn went against that. They went against the officials. And they went against themselves. And they fall short by 6.
They did. And, again, by no means are we pumping any sort of, because I've always hated the mentality of, you know, it's nice to, if you're going to lose one, it's nice to lose it now rather than in late March. Or, you know, you have to learn, because you can still very much learn from a win, right? Everything doesn't have to go your way. You don't have to look at a loss as the only way that you can learn. Auburn, it didn't happen early. Obviously, you got out to the 13-2 run, but I would say that Auburn got a little overwhelmed at times, and I think that it worked out benefiting the team and what could happen in the future. You know what I mean? Like, it looked like there were at times where the noise got to them a little bit. They panicked a little bit. You had a couple, two or three times where you had a couple back-to-back bad shots that led to 4 or 5 points on the Duke side of things. But there was never that 13-0 run where you just felt like, oh, there it is. There was the punch with 6 minutes left in the second half. Every single time, Duke had a response and the crowd got up. Auburn found a way to make a run and keep it right around that 1-2 score game to where you couldn't give up on them.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with that. And that's something that you and I were talking about early, was old Auburn teams, instead of going up 13-2 like they did last night, they would have been down 13-2
and it would have been 3 straight 35-foot threes to try and work their way back into the game, and all of a sudden you're down 19-4 and you don't have a fighter's chance back into this game.
And yeah, and you climb back the entire game. But this one was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and then Auburn had to fight for the second half, but they had to fight everything. Right? I mean, you guys know the stats at this point, and and a lot of you watched it and listened to it. I mean, Auburn was in foul trouble from the rip, from the jump. And for there to be such a difference in free throws, what was the final?
15.
15 free throw differential.
Yeah, 27 to 12.
For Duke at home, which, if you listened to the show yesterday, Daryl Dapperts told you, be ready for it. It's going to happen. They're going to get calls in there. But Auburn was in such a bad spot. I'm not looking at it currently. How many did they make versus how many did Auburn make? Free throws.
Duke made 17, Auburn made 10.
Okay.
Auburn was 10 for 12 from the free throw line.
Yeah, I mean, that's good, right? And I had thought at the time, okay, Duke may not make a much more free throws, but Auburn's going to get stuck in foul trouble. And sure enough, they did. I mean, Dylan was in foul trouble. Pettiford was in foul trouble. Chad was in foul trouble. I mean, everybody got in foul trouble here. And Auburn had to fight against that the entire way. Did not play well. They went through ruts. Their offense got stagnant. And even then, they still had a fighter's chance at the very end of this thing.
You go back and you look at it, and you can, not even including anything official-wise, with the officials, not official that way, but with the official side of things, there's five or six plays that you can go back, and even against everything that happened in that game, where if three of those five or four of those six plays go your way rather than Duke's way, the score is flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that makes you feel, I guess, as good as you can with that loss, because it wasn't one of those games where it was like, oh my gosh, we lost by 15, but the score was not even that close. You know, you hit two threes in the final minute to cut it to that or whatever. You felt like you legitimately had a chance the entire game. I mean, the Proctor three from 35 feet off the loose ball, which every Auburn fan knew was going in. Every single Auburn fan. You've seen it happen where Auburn plays defense for 29.8 seconds of the possession and you bank a three in. That three right there, a basket interference call, that's 5 points. And then a Chaney Johnson missed layup right after that three. That's 7 points. All of a sudden, Auburn's up one.
Yeah.
It's such a crazy thing to where two or three things of the ball goes your way versus another way, regardless of foul considerations or free throw lines or anything that changes anything of that, you're two or three possessions away from winning this ball game.
Which is how it's going to be in the SEC, which is how it's going to be in the SEC tournament, and which is how it's going to be in the NCAA tournament. That's why this type of a game felt very Elite Eight. I mean, this felt like it had Elite Eight type of magnitude, and that's what it comes down to in the NCAA tournament, which is why it's so hard to win the national championship.
Both of these teams, after this game, were tied for the equal percentages or the equal odds to win the national championship. And these two teams played on the 4th of December. I mean, that's credit to both of those teams for stepping in and saying, yeah, we'll step into the heavy rink. We're not going to go get a little cheap win or whatever. We're going to play the best in the business, and it's exactly what you saw on ESPN last night.
More to talk and cover with Auburn and Duke as the Tigers fall in the SEC-ACC Challenge. We want to hear from you at 334-321-1390. Got a couple of texts we'll go over as well. All that coming up as we're off and running here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins with you on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Talking Auburn and Duke as the Tigers go to Cameron Indoor last night. They fall short by 6 to the Dukies. And, you know, we were getting into some of the details right there about what happened in this game. And I just think that Auburn would tell you, and I know this, again, I talked to Dylan earlier today, where they didn't play good. They didn't play up to their standard. This was not that they played bad, but in the big games this year against Iowa State, North Carolina, Houston and Duke, is it fair to say this was the, quote, worst game that they played? I mean, they didn't start good against Iowa State, but they fought back and won the game. This one obviously resulted in a loss.
It's the first time that not even going back to the first half, because I think the first half was, other than the first 3 or 4 minutes, the first half was not a great offensive game for Auburn, only putting up 36 points. But it's the first time in those big games that you mentioned that you felt like down the stretch, Auburn wasn't the aggressor. Auburn wasn't the one putting the other team in bad positions. It was Duke that was able to do that to Auburn. Again, I saw something that said that Auburn scored a basket just under 5 minutes and then missed 7 straight shots and didn't make another one until the 51-second mark with a Jani Broome layup. Mm. That right there, going 0 for 7 in crunch time, that's a big difference, and that's something that you haven't seen from this Auburn team throughout the entire year.
Yeah, and that's something that I don't think will happen very often, but that does go back to me saying this Duke team matches up pretty well with Auburn, and I think you saw that last night on the floor. They're very athletic, they're lengthy, and most people can handle the basketball. But Auburn's foul trouble played a huge factor in that too.
Well, yeah, there were plenty of times where you saw where somebody would get beat at the perimeter and drive in, and Jani would almost have to jump out of the way and try and just almost meet him at the top with a layup or something just to try and, you know, contest it without fouling, rather than being able to be that rim protector and to be able to create so many mismatches on the defensive end of the floor.
Eric in Auburn sends us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067, says, got to make the trip to Duke, and we showed out. Says, refs were worth 6 points, by the way. I agree with that. And
you know how much Duke won by?
Yeah, it's crazy how that works. He says, he got to watch a game at Butler's Hinklefield House. It's felt like Wrigley Field. Okay. That's a good one. That's another good one. Yeah, that's a very underrated one, I think. I think it's because Butler just hasn't been good recently.
That's what I was about to say. It's based on the team. That plays a big factor in that.
He said that was cool. He did go on to say, we're about to get to the phone lines with Mike, says, last couple of games at Neville, there were some empty seats and some rich folks sitting on their hands. Time to step it back up. And I fully agree with that.
That's something that we've talked about.
That's been happening for several years.
On this show to where, we've talked about that to where the Tuesday night games that are the 8 o'clock and it's too late to get out or it's too loud and everything. And all of a sudden you get there and it's 80% full.
If that
plays a really, really big factor in some of those big games.
334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. Mike, what's up, my man? I got about a minute for you.
That's fine. It won't take but a minute to say this.
Okay.
The reason why Auburn didn't play aggressive is because they would half of them would have fouled out, if not three quarters.
Yeah.
I've been watching games either at Cameron or watching them as a spectator when I was growing up. My family's Clemson folks.
Okay.
And even when Clemson had good teams, that was next to the Ding Dong, which was almost impossible for the longest time for them to win at. Duke was, if Clemson came in there with a ranked team or a high quality team, you could guarantee to walk out with a L, and at least two to three of the stars would be fouled out by midway through the second half.
Yeah.
It just, they get a lot of calls. I'm not saying Auburn didn't get away with a few things too, but when a game's called that way and we play the way we do, it makes it very difficult to win that game against a high-quality opponent, and that's what happened.
You're absolutely
right. I was proud of the way we played, and I think that game is going to pay dividends later on, barring any health issues. I think this team has as good a chance as any has ever walked on the court at Auburn to take it all the way, even better than the Final Four team, just because of the balance and the experience and everything that comes with it. So, anyway, I was happy with it, other than not winning the game, because I was already expecting the outcome before it even started. I would just been surprised if we won just based on how big of a game it was at that arena.
Sure,
it's just extremely difficult unless they were down. You know, they were not as highly ranked.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. That's my thought.
Yeah.
I'll let y'all take it from there.
Yep, appreciate the call. Very well said, I think, in terms of what this loss does for Auburn. I agree. I mean, I think it's going to help them very much so.
It definitely will. And he said two really good things, was saying that the way that the officiating worked out and the way that Auburn played down the stretch, neither of those two things helped Auburn overcome any sort of deficit. And so I think when you talk about being happy with the result, where this was a 6-point game rather than a 12 or 13 point game where you felt like you got run out of the gym.
And you have film to go back and say, look how close we were in this game and what we can become if you fix these very, very few things. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about where Auburn goes from here and some football things as well. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network joins us next.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes in to hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goetz with you on the Auburn Opelika sports leader, and we sit down and talk with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, who's with us every single Thursday. Brad, how are you, my man? We missed you last week with Thanksgiving and the holidays, so hope you're doing well.
Oh, you didn't miss me. You were having enough turkey and dressing and all the other trimmings. You didn't give me a thought a week
You don't
ago,
know that. Okay? So you don't know that.
Come on. I know better. You probably had. Listen, how good was the food? What all was on your plate? Just a week ago.
Everything. I have turkey. I get turkey and ham. I do mac and cheese. I do dressing, mashed potatoes, gravy on both, and the turkey. Green bean casserole for sure. Little bit of squash casserole because I'm polite. And every dessert that's there, and a roll.
What's the best dessert?
Who
at Thanksgiving?
Normally, I'm a big pumpkin pie guy, and I really, really like it. I loved eating it growing up. I did have a bread pudding this year that I normally don't have, and it was phenomenal. But I'm classic. I'm pretty basic though. Just a warm apple pie, vanilla ice cream on the side. That's good enough for me. And a chocolate pie too. So,
yeah, good stuff.
What about you, Brad? What's the go-to dessert?
Oh, at Thanksgiving, I think it's got to be your standard pumpkin pie. Thanksgiving, though, is the only time that I'll eat pecan pie. I'm not a big pecan pie person, but something about Thanksgiving makes it. And I had one this year that was the best that I've ever had.
Wow.
So I may be coming around on pecan pie a little bit.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you had a pretty good Thanksgiving, and so did Auburn fans as they were watching Auburn win and really dominate in Maui in those three games. And we're going to get to Auburn basketball and what they did there and their loss last night against Duke in Cameron Indoor. But we do need to talk about the football season and the football team for Auburn as the regular season has come to an end. We're going to talk signing day and transfer portal and all that. But it's crazy, Brad. You talk about soaking it all in and really living in the moment for every football season because it's over before you can blink.
Yeah, we're back to that 9-month countdown now. I mean, we got to sit through 9 months with no football before we get to Baylor next year to open the season. And we get a little glad. I mean, you know, you get spring ball and A-Day, and you get the schedule release, I guess, next week from the SEC Network. But, yeah, until we're back, it is nine months before, maybe even more than that. No, I guess it's nine, before we're back at Jordan-Hare Stadium for game two of 2025. So that's why it's important to enjoy it. You know, don't tell me that the regular season doesn't matter when, you know, I see people at their first games ever and tailgating and throwing the football, and it's just a fun time. So it goes by way too fast.
How would you summarize what year two under Hugh Freeze was for Auburn on and off the field, just the entire 2024 campaign? How would you describe that to somebody that, for whatever reason, didn't watch it?
Yeah. You know, if you're trying to get in shape, and let's say you're trying to lose some weight, lose some inches around your waist, and you're really concerned with the number on the scale. That's really your concern. And you go and you lift weights and you put on muscle, and you put on a fair amount of muscle, and you lose body fat, and you step on the scale and you see a number that's the same as before you started, or maybe even a little higher than when you started. Your initial response is going to be disappointed because the number went up. When in actuality, right, muscle weighs more than fat. So if you're putting on muscle, the weight, the number on the scale may not change all that much. If you're looking at just Auburn's record in 2025, you're going to think that Auburn regressed. And yes, like purely in a binary way, like the record was worse than it was a year ago. But the talent level was raised. I think you've increased the value of several different positions on the field relative to what it was a year ago, which is going to enable you to go out and get even better players in the portal for those same positions than you did a year ago. Wide receiver is one that I think of immediately with what Keandre Lambert-Smith did. I think the quarterback position is going to be one that's going to offer you much more than what it did a year ago in the portal. And I think that you got some young players. You're the youngest team in college football from a defensive perspective, and that will pay off tremendously in the future. So short term, it's a team that probably underachieved. There's no question the record is not what will fly long term. But if you look a little deeper, if you can allow yourself to look a little deeper than the record, you will see growth. You'll see advancement of the program in 2024. And now the next step is going to be to actually see it in the record next year.
Which I think you can roll into what happened yesterday with the National Signing Day, where Auburn secured a top 10 class, still flirting with a top 5 class, depending on which outlet you look at, and with some of those stragglers out there who have yet to sign, whether it be this period or in February. And so I think it was impressive yesterday, Brad. I'm curious on what you think on what Auburn was able to do. Very many surprises, right? Maybe not a whole lot of drama like we've seen other places, but I think that speaks volumes, too, for Auburn to keep the guys that they had committed.
Well, there's no doubt. Now, you get a five-star quarterback. You get, four offensive linemen. You get 9 of the top 11 players in the state of Alabama. There's a lot. Pardon me here, Jacob. I've got a cough. I beg your pardon.
No, you're good.
Okay.
Look at you telling them to be quiet. Look at you. I'm proud of you, Brad. I feel so special.
No, I've had something in my throat for a while now, and that's it bit me a couple times on the broadcast last night. No.
Oh, I thought you said call, Brad. You said cough.
No,
my
no.
bad. Oh.
No, and I hit the mute button on the phone. That's what it was.
Oh, I don't feel as special now. Anyway, continue.
But look, you get talented players at the skill positions, you get talented players up front, offensive, defensive linemen. You run the state of Alabama. Again, 9 of the top 11 or so rated players in the state are coming to Auburn. You get the state record holder running back. You get a 5-star quarterback. There's not a lot not to like about this class. So I think you meet needs. I think you, again, raise the talent level of the roster. You showed that you have a vision that these guys are still loyal to, they still believe in, despite the record on the field the first 2 years.
Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network joining us here on ESPN 106.7. And as crazy as signing day is with such little time and all the moving pieces, the calendar in college football is broken. I think most people would agree with that because you end the regular season, then you have signing day, and already you've got to turn every single piece of your attention to the transfer portal that opens up in just a few days on December 9th. And Auburn has to go and add some key pieces there, Brad. Where do you think they start, and do you have any ideas on who that could be? I know we don't want to speculate. It's not technically open yet, but we have a lot of these guys who have announced their intention to enter the transfer portal.
Well, I think you look at linebacker first. I look at linebacker first. I look at linebacker before I look at offensive line or secondary, because I think they have stocked the secondary with talent. I look at wide receiver too. Regardless of who stays, because I look at what a team is, what is known that you have to replace. And Keandre Lambert-Smith came up a few yards shy of 1,000 yards. I think you ought to be able to go out and get somebody who can do similar things to Keandre Lambert-Smith. You've raised the profile of that position in this offense. And as good as the freshmen are, you know, KLS's benefit, in addition to what he did on the field, was being a veteran guy that could come in and kind of be a leader for that group. So I think you look for something similar to that. But again, linebacker. Between Eugene Asante, Dorian Maiusi, and Austin Keys, they played 1,500 snaps last year. 1,500. 1,500 snaps. So that's a lot of guys you're going to replace. And you love your freshman. You love DeMarcus Riddick. You love Joe Phillips, who may be a buck rather than a linebacker. DJ Barber, Robert Woodyard, is he a guy ready to lead in the middle? How much do you want your true freshman, even though this year true freshman played and played well and got better, but, you know, is Elijah Melendez ready to come in and play 40 snaps a game at a middle linebacker? Or do you need somebody from the portal for that? So I think that's the biggest position for this team. Maybe you look at offensive line based on who stays or who goes. Maybe you look at running back based on who stays or who goes, because you probably need four when all is said and done in that running back room. And even if everybody else stays, you're left with three. So I look at what you know you're going to have to replace, and quarterback, running back, leading receiver, and 1,500 snaps in the linebacker room. Those are the areas that I think you focus on.
Brad, as we move through, I'd love to dive deeper into it, but I do want to get your thoughts on basketball as well, as the Tigers were in Maui. They went and won Auburn's first ever Maui Invitational since the last time we've talked to you. And before we get to what happened last night, what a great tournament that was for Auburn to not just be in, but just flat out win in the way that they did it.
Well, they flipped a switch at halftime against Iowa State, who I think was the second best team in that tournament. And they've played like it ever since, by the way, going 2-0 the rest of the way. And then they knocked off Marquette last night. So the second half against Iowa State, and then never trailed against North Carolina or Memphis. We're never tied after taking the first lead of the game in either one of those games. So that 50-minute stretch was a significant stretch for this team. You bring home a championship. You will not have a 48-hour span, because they played all three of those games within 48 hours. You're not going to have a 48-hour turnaround like that the rest of the year, even in the NCAA tournament. Even if you go to the Final Four and you play a Final Four in a national championship game, it's not going to be what it was three games in 48 hours in Maui against that competition. So confidence comes from undeniable proof that you can do something you set out to do, because you've done it before, and this team has that.
And their reward for winning the Maui Invitational was to come back home, have a couple of days to rest up before they fly and go to play the top 10 ranked Duke Blue Devils in one of the greatest venues in all of college basketball. And it was a sight to see, Brad. It really was. It was a sight to see. It was a great thing to hear. The broadcast sounded fantastic. You all did a great job with every aspect of that last night on the Auburn Sports Network. And the result is disappointing, yes, but Auburn should still feel good walking away from this. Do you agree with that?
100%. I think you can make the argument. This just sounds biased as heck, but I think you can make the argument Auburn was the better team.
Yeah.
And if they played, you know, if you play at Cameron Indoor Stadium, teams that have advantages like that at home, magical things happen. Like guys hit six threes in the first half of a game. Like sometimes that just happens. So Duke might win three or four out of five on their home floor. But if you play at Neville Arena, Auburn probably wins three or four out of five if those two teams played that many times. And on a neutral floor, who knows? Maybe we get that chance again. Biggest team in college basketball, best defensive team in college basketball. And what impressed me the most, and listen, Duke, just as kind of behind the curtain, I met Coach K when I was 14 years old on a tour of the campus. I have been a Duke basketball fan. They've been like my second favorite team for like 30 years. Okay. Because I met him. I met the man, and he was awesome.
That is pretty cool, I have to admit.
So, you know, I like Duke basketball. At some point, though, this team, like this, it's okay for a little while to go, oh, this is incredible. It's a mecca of college basketball, and it's wonderful to be here. At some point, you got to flip the switch from how cool is it to be here to, all right, we're coming to kick their rear end. And this team did that. They weren't in awe. They didn't feel, quote unquote, just lucky to be here. They flipped the switch, and they came out ready to kick somebody's rear end, and they got out to a 13-2 lead. Duke's an elite team. They responded the way elite teams do in elite environments. But, man, this basketball team came out the right way. They were focused. They were prepared. And played overall, like, they didn't play their best game, but at the same time, they're playing one of the best teams they'll play all season long in their home gym. Some of that is going to happen. I think you take a lot of positives away from the game last night.
Well, it's funny you use the word elite because I think this game had an Elite Eight feel to it. I mean, I think both of these teams are that good to make it that far or even farther in the NCAA tournament. So would not be surprised if Auburn and Duke find themselves playing again sometime in March. Auburn will return home. They've got Richmond coming up Sunday morning, Brad. So now that football is wrapped up, full-on basketball season, tell the people what they need to know in terms of the Auburn Sports Network broadcasts that are coming up, some changes on dates as well.
Yeah, in fact, Tiger Talk is coming up in just a few hours over on Wings 94.3. We've got a lot of stuff. We have a Hugh Freeze signing day interview. We have an interview with associate head coach Stephen Pearl talking men's basketball. Coach Jay's interviewed on the show. The final This Week in Auburn Soccer with Karen Hoppe. She's announced her resignation. So that's today, or that's tonight at 6 on Tiger Talk. We moved back to Thursdays for basketball season. So I know we'll talk again next week, but Tiger Talk is tonight and next Thursday, and then we'll take a couple of weeks off for the holidays and then back in January regularly on Thursdays. So hopefully folks will check us out. We're in the studio tonight. Back at Baumhauer's next Thursday.
And then you guys are on the air Sunday morning as well for Auburn basketball for Richmond, right?
That's right, 10:30. So go to early church service on Sunday and make sure that you're out in time. If you can't come to the arena for the game, don't have a ticket, you can listen to us on the radio starting at 10:30.
Awesome, Brad. Appreciate your time, my man. Always a blast to talk to you. Get back to work. All right, get back to work. I took you away from long enough, so you got stuff to do, I'm sure.
Now I can cough in peace without worrying about getting choked up on the air. No, appreciate it. Always good to talk to you. War Eagle.
War Eagle, Brad. Thanks so much. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. Always appreciate his time. A blast talking to him. And he's always got great information, great analogies as well. Brad is one of the best in the business. And we always look forward to having him on the show. Let's take our final break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one, and launch ourselves into hour number two.
War Eagle, this is Coach Hugh Freeze, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Christian Griffin back with me in the studio. We appreciate Brad Law joining us on the airwaves, and always appreciate him. And again, they're doing such a good job over at the Auburn Sports Network. As he mentioned, Tiger Talk coming up tonight. That is over on Wings 94.3. You can tune in for that. That is in the studio, so you can't go live and listen to it, like on location. So we're going to talk in hour two about the college football playoff, the rankings that came out on Tuesday, and how just ridiculous they are. And conference championship games coming up this weekend. I mean, it's getting pretty serious now, Christian, to where and I saw somebody talk about this on Twitter earlier today, maybe last night, where and this will be the appetizer conversation to get into it in hour two, but the committee in terms of SMU, right, that seems to be the big focal point conversation for this weekend in conference championship games, because I think everybody agrees Texas and Georgia are both in, win or lose. I think everybody agrees that Oregon, Penn State are in, win or lose. But this ACC championship game and the Big 12 championship game's got some implications here too. But the ACC championship game has now become what everybody will watch and the thing that everybody uses on Sunday afternoon. I don't know what time the official rankings show is or whatever, but that's the game that everybody's watching because the committee is going to draw a line in the sand somehow, some way. For the first time, they're going to have to because it's the initial, or it's the, not the initial, but the final rankings, the first final rankings, if that makes sense, of this new playoff era. And we're truly going to learn, even though it's written in stone, right? They took the rock out and they carved it in the wall like a caveman. And they said, teams will not be punished for the result of their conference championship game. If they drop SMU and they put Alabama in, they're going to catch all sorts of you-know-what. Like, I think Doug was talking about it today. I've seen it on social media. Like, and that's not the only situation. That just seems to be the one that everybody is honing in on right now.
Yeah, again, going back to it, you feel like Texas and Georgia, at worst, they would flip right, to where Georgia then would become the 2 seed, Texas would go to the 7 seed, same thing with the Big 12, Oregon would go to the 5, Penn State would go to the 1, or something along those lines if those two teams were to win. But yeah, this ACC championship, you mentioned it, you won't get punished for a conference championship loss, ... until you do. And if that were to be the case, we've talked about it for weeks, we've talked about it for months, it would make it to where the conference championship will, in a couple years, be between the 3rd seed and the 4th seed in the regular season standings, because the number 1 and 2 teams, they won't want to play because there wouldn't be a benefit, and there's not really going to be anything good if you lose. You'll find your way out of the playoff if you play it.
I hate when I'm right. I hate that. Really, I do. I hate to brag on the radio. It's not my style, but I just have a bad feeling, man. I have a bad feeling about this, that we're going to be right. We'll talk about it coming up in hour number 2. Playoff rankings, conference championship games. Who's in? Who's out? Does it really matter? We'll have that coming up for you in hour number 2.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number 2 during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number 1, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. It's the show audio just posted for you in a podcast version at ESPNAU.com, so be sure you go and check that out. Christian Griffin and I talked to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. We also did a pretty good recap of Auburn basketball against Duke last night. Didn't get into all the details just yet. If we have some more time here in hour number 2, we will. We got more topics that we need to get to. And so if you want to listen to that, you can go to ESPNAU.com after the show today. We'll have that loaded for you in just a little bit. Before we get into content, we have a lot to get to in this hour. We're going to talk college football playoff rankings, what it means going into the final weekend of, not the regular season, but the final non-playoff weekend. How about that? We'll talk about that and what that has to do with the rankings and what we could see on Sunday. Did you find a time, Christian, on what time the playoff ranking show or the playoff, whatever the heck they call it, the committee show or the beauty pageant reveal is the second Miss America pageant that they're going to have on ESPN Sunday morning?
Let me get the... I haven't seen a true time.
It is Sunday, right? I'm not crazy.
Yes, it just says... Yeah, it just says Sunday, December 8th on ESPN.
It's
12 to 4.
12 to 4? It was like that last year. Dude, they better...
Good Lord.
Sorry, let's just go down a rabbit hole for a second. Shout out to CBS, who normally does the NCAA tournament bracket reveal selection show, right? They have the huge selection show. They start the first, 5 minutes, breaking everything down, and then, boom, they get right into it. Within 20 minutes, you know every single team inside the NCAA tournament. Then they do their big breakdown. Let's go through the brackets. ESPN does their show, blah, blah, blah.
It's going to be, let's reveal the 12 seed. Let's interview Boise State's head coach. Let's interview the 11 seed. Let's go interview the 11 seed coach. It's going to be an entire, actually, what they'll do is they'll start at the top. They'll go 1, probably interview Dan Lanning or whoever it may be, and they'll go all the way from 10 to 12, and they'll leave spot 11 up until, so you'll have to watch all 3 hours and 47 minutes before you see who the 11th seed is, considering there's four or five teams right now that are debating for that final spot.
What a joke.
And then you'll have to get the reaction.
Surely not, right? Oh, my God. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to talk about that in this hour. Plus, we're going to talk to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC as well. He'll be joining us coming up in about 30 minutes. Before we talk about all that, though, do want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7 is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour of my show each and every day here on ESPN. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Best way to get into us right now is the On the Line text box. It is always open, 334-784-1067. Christian, your reactions to the rankings on Tuesday from the College Football Playoff Committee, where teams like Alabama are magically back in to the College Football Playoff bracket and rankings. Or rankings and bracket, I think that's probably the proper way to say that, since one does not directly correlate to the other, because, you know, why would we make it easy for anybody?
Yeah, why eliminate confusion?
Yeah, right? Yeah, why would you do that?
You have to continue to. The first thing, going back to what we're talking about, is they call it, you know, it's usually Selection Sunday or whatever, they call this Selection Day, and for a four-hour broadcast, it is a Selection Day.
Yeah.
It's not a Selection Show.
No, that's a Selection double... film, double movie, like
Selection Avatar.
Selection Wolf of Wall Street. Like, that's,
oh my goodness. Well, looking at it the way that everything planned out right now with the College Football Playoff, just running everybody down where everything and everybody is seated right now, with, you would feel like 10 of the 12 spots are just about concreted in, or at least 10 of the 12 teams, maybe not necessarily in those spots. Where it sits right now, Oregon at 1, Texas at 2, SMU at 3, even though they are the 8th ranked team in the country. Boise State now listed as that 4th automatic bid that gets the first round bye. It is then Penn State at 5, Notre Dame at 6. It is Georgia at 7, Ohio State at 8, Tennessee 9, Indiana 10, Alabama 11, and then the final team that gets the automatic bid, Arizona State, right now listed at it. So, way you're looking at it, Ohio State would host Tennessee, Penn State would host Arizona State, Georgia would host Indiana, and Notre Dame would host Alabama, the Crimson Tide, who... again, that 11 seed right there, that's where a majority of the conversation takes place, because Alabama sits in it right now. South Carolina feels like they're deserving. Ole Miss feels like they're deserving. What happens if Clemson beats LSU? Do they drop SMU? So many things that they say can't change, but you just dang sure know that they want it to, or you're dang sure hoping that it doesn't change. Because if they do, they're just digging themselves an even bigger grave.
We'll put a pin in that for just a second as we get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. And Ed, you're on the line. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Doing good. Good to hear from you.
Yes, good to talk to y'all. I was going to say, you know, as far as I kind of love the class that Auburn got. You know, I know we missed out on a few, but you're always going to. But we held on to so many. I know you've heard the rumors of Ole Miss contacting Cam Coleman, and, you know, possibly, you think he'll stay at Auburn? I really do, but what do you think?
I do. I think he, as far as I know and have been told in the conversations I've had, I'm confident that he does. Now, things change, and you know, anything's possible, I guess, but I feel very confident that Cam Coleman will be an Auburn Tiger this time next year.
Oh, okay. And I was going to ask you something else. That one area, and I don't know how the structure as far as coaching goes, and I definitely don't want to disparage some Auburn coach or something, but our one area that I think we could have got more out of special teams this year, and I don't know if you saw this, somebody on some site put something kind of nasty about Alex McPherson, that he needs to toughen. You know, I want to just grab them and slap them. You know, yeah. A young man going through gastrointestinal problems are rough. you know, what he's been going through. But somebody was saying that, you know, but special teams this year absolutely didn't do that well. Who is the special? Do you see any changes coming in Auburn's coaching this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's probably the first spot you would think would need a change. And I agree. I think that was very it was – The special teams this year were not good. I mean, let's just say it like it is. They were not good. And I mean, kicking the field goals was bad. Kickoffs were bad. Punting got worse. And coverages and returns were bad. I mean, the whole thing was bad. And I think it's easy to say, yes, that you need to make some changes there. And they very well might. But at this point, I think Auburn is so focused on recruiting and then the transfer portal. I doubt many of those conversations have been had, but if they do, I think you could see that special teams, probably make a change.
Okay, and I had one more question. I know you probably read in AL.com, but Jackson Arnold, Miller Moss, the biggest name, Castanello and Salter, as far as transfer portal guys, and I think Hugh Freeze made it very obvious that he's going to sign a guy. You know, do you think – I know a lot of people are out there, Miller Moss. Who do you – have you heard any kind of leanings of what's your opinion on that?
Haven't heard any specific names in terms of what Auburn could want. I think a lot of those guys you named are really high up there. I think Caden Salter's big on that list. Miller Moss is one that I don't know. I think some people like him, but some people don't, just because he seems like a little bit of a flight risk. I mean, McNamara entered or is planning to enter from Iowa, the former Michigan quarterback. I really like Jackson Arnold from Oklahoma. I think that's a really big option.
I'll throw John Mateer in there as well from Washington State. A really, really solid pick.
Well, who knows? Maybe Arch Manning will decide he wants to come to Auburn for.
That's right. That's right.
What were you going, guys? Yep. I appreciate y'all listening to me.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate the call, Ed. Good to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Let me say something really quick on the Alex McPherson conversation, and then we'll leave that alone and move on. To anybody that says nasty things about him, who's been going through serious, serious issues, and from what I understand, were at what point life-threatening, shame on you. Shame on you. So, I mean, that...
it's one of those things that's so much bigger than football.
I mean, seriously. Bigger than... a lot bigger than sports. For a kid that was fighting for his life. And, again, that's what I was told and heard, that it got pretty serious.
Yeah, he got under 100 pounds. Gosh. Which is just, I mean, one of those
as a
things
grown,
to where...
I mean, not a fully grown adult, but a young adult. I mean, that adult man, that's pretty crazy. And so, to that point, Auburn's special teams and things like that, it's just, you've got to get it fixed. And Auburn's been so blessed for so long to have had really good special teams, field goal kickers and punters and electric punt returners and kickoff returns and things like that. You do have to find a way to get that corrected, because you can't – I said it the other day. It's one of those areas where you don't go and highlight it because it's great, but you bury it when it's wrong or when it's bad, right? It's one of those things that just doesn't get a whole lot of love. It's like, oh, you made that kick? Yeah, you were supposed to.
Yeah, it goes by the wayside until it's negative and until it costs you multiple games and makes it to where the mentality of going for three is out the window and you have to go for it on fourth and four when you feel like it's a chip shot field goal. You feel like that comes back and haunts you later in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Things you don't necessarily think about, even just something to where, not that this was the case this year, but if the starting field position is the 32-yard line rather than the 25 after kickoffs, things like that make a really, really big difference.
Absolutely. And Ed, I love the quarterback transfer portal conversation tomorrow during Free For All Friday. Definitely want to hit on that because the portal opens on Monday. And so we already have big-time names that are intending to enter in terms of quarterbacks and other positions that I think Auburn
haven't entered
talk
yet,
about.
Though, right? Just intending.
And they're not talking to any other programs right
now. No, it's all just speculation about what teams could want or need.
Do not contact me. I'm in the portal with a DNC. Do not contact.
No, he hasn't entered yet. We it's still don't contact because I haven't entered yet. But as soon as midnight hits on Monday, then I'll allow your phone call.
Hey, Grandma, be sure your phone ringer's turned on. Be sure that thing's turned up. Just in case, I may be giving you, or somebody may be giving you a call. I don't know. Let's keep talking playoffs a little bit before we get to break. You had read off the bracket, right? And I'm with you. I think there are a handful of teams, probably five, that are 100% in, or the 99.9%, just in, whatever. Oregon is in, Ohio State is in, Penn State is in, Georgia is in, and Texas is in. Can we agree on that? That those five teams are not going anywhere. No matter what happens on Saturday, those five teams are going to be in.
It's, is it weird to say that I would say Tennessee is in that list as well, and they don't even have to, they're like, again, they don't even play a game, and it makes them feel more secure in the playoff than if they were playing a game.
Because they're the seventh ranked team, but they're currently the ninth seeded team. There's not enough chaos to go around for them to just, I mean, it's impossible. Yeah, I think it's impossible.
Because it would make Clemson beat SMU and the committee drop SMU, which they said they wouldn't do for a conference playoff loss. It would be Texas beating Georgia and then Georgia somehow getting knocked out, which they said that they wouldn't do. And then it would probably take Boise State losing their Mountain West championship. But even then, again, so many things that the committee is hoping doesn't happen, because if they do, again, they're just digging themselves a grave.
We need to take a break, but I think it just hit me. I have an explanation for what this season and all of these scenarios, what has happened this year that's completely opposite of what we thought it was going to be. We'll talk about that when we come back, as we're just underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line in hour number two.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
I've solved the world's problems. Hunger? No, not necessarily. Massive sickness? No, I'm not that smart. But I have solved the world problem of why we can't wrap our brains around why it's so complicated and confusing for this year's college football playoff, right? It's different than what it's been in the past. We watched a four-team playoff for a decade. A decade, we watched it that way. And there were standards that were set, there were trends, there were feisty fans, there were teams left out, outside looking in, all yada, 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 right? And then, with the 12-team playoff, all of those standards, all of those trends, all of those rules were thrown out the window.
Because having 12 teams would solve everything, right?
Right.
It would clear up every confusion, and every team that deserved to be in would be in.
Yeah. We decided, let's just let more teams in. That'll solve it. That'll make the Florida States happy. That'll make the Boise States happy. That'll make the big conferences happy, because the SEC and the Big Ten will get more teams in because they feel they deserve more, right? And the entire argument against the four-team playoff was, there's too many teams, there's too many deserving teams, and not enough spots. The problem we are seeing right now with this 12-team playoff, it may not be this way every year, but it is right now in the opening, in the debut of the 12-team playoff. The previous problem was too many deserving teams and not enough spots. I believe we now have too many spots and not enough deserving teams. The teams at the top, the five that we said are in, they're deserving. Those teams are playoff good. Those teams, right, a year ago in the four-team playoff, Oregon, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, and even throw Georgia in there, those teams would have the resume and follow the standards and guidelines to get into a four-team playoff. We all just assumed that this 12-team playoff would just solve everything because, Of course the 11th team was going to be competitive and have a resume good enough to get in. That's why we made it this big, right? That's why some people said it should have been 6 or 10 or whatever the case may be. But I think that's the issue we've run into here, Christian, is we don't have enough deserving teams for a 12-team playoff until we get new standards and guidelines, which the playoff committee refuses to give to us.
It makes it to where they're giving us unanswerable questions or unanswerable standards because you don't know what the standard is anymore. And they're now trying to make it 16 teams. That's been the conversation before we even played the 12-team format, right? I believe they called them expansionists, and I was an anti-expansionist. And if anything, I think that it should have been 8 or 10. Make it to where you gave the top two teams the first round bye, and the other teams went out and did it. Because if that's the case, even if it's 8 or say it's 10, teams like Alabama, teams like Miami, teams like Ole Miss, teams like South Carolina that are all that quote-unquote bubble team or listed as the first two out, in this case 3, there would be no argument. There would be no complaint of, well, hey, look at our record. Yeah, we're 9-3, but we're still one of the best teams in the country. Based off of the four-team format, if this was last year, there would be no argument for those teams to be able to play in the college football playoff. And they've made it now to where all of a sudden you add 8 more teams, you don't change anything, and now you feel like there's 16 or 17 teams that, based off of how these rankings are going, feel like they deserve a spot. They added so many more blanks or so many more blank spots that you can write so many more names.
More teams qualify.
But nothing else changes other than more teams that are, yeah, like you're saying, more teams quote-unquote qualify. But
well, I think a problem too is, to go along with all of this, right, as I was telling you during the break, in the four-team, in the BCS, and I've had this argument already, in the BCS era and in the four-team playoff era, there was a line. You drew a line in the sand. You knew what the standard was. The BCS, unfortunately, 9 times out of 10 was go undefeated. Go undefeated and win a Power Four conference, you got a chance to make the national championship game. Didn't always go that way, but it was pretty darn close.
Or win, lose one game early and win your conference championship game because it mattered back then.
It did matter back then. It doesn't anymore, but it did back then. Well, technically it still does, but not getting to that. Then in the four-team playoff, right, those standards did change. That line in the sand moved several times, but you knew where it was, and you could eliminate teams as the year went on. That's the issue you've run into. Look at the top 25. You can make an argument for almost every team in the top 25 to be considered for the college football playoff, because we don't know where the line in the sand is.
And I think that's exactly what they wanted through weeks 11 and 12, right? To where you still felt like there were 15 teams or even 20 teams that felt like they deserved a chance to play, to where the season didn't feel over for them. But now you're at that point to where nothing has been answered. There's still, like you're saying, a legitimate argument for 15, 20 teams to get into these 12 spots, and no answers have been given because the line in the sand just gets kicked over, and then all of a sudden you're 2 or 3 years down the line and you have no idea if there's even a line anymore.
And I get that's what they were wanting to do, and I think you're right about that. The problem is they went from one extreme to the other.
Very much so.
They went from one end to the other rather than trying to find a happy medium. That's fine, right? The whole idea of wanting games to matter in November, that's great. And I think that really was good for college football.
Yeah.
I really, really do. I think that was great for the sport of college football. I mean, every single week, we were able to sit in here and talk about a handful of games, several handfuls of games, that had playoff implications. And that's awesome when you got to watch it. The problem is, we were never able to eliminate people. There should not be this many teams that believe they can make it going into selection day. Like,
there shouldn't be teams that are having to submit a formal, almost application of, here's why I'm deserving.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be a, an elite thing to make. Like, that's what makes the playoffs the playoffs. Whether it be college or professional, that's the argument in the NBA and Major League Baseball when they keep expanding. And it's like, it means something to make the playoffs. It means something. You earned your way to the postseason, but there has to be a standard. There has to be something, an attainability line, if that makes sense. I mean, there's got to be a goal
right.
that you, and that's why the NFL playoffs are so good. There has to be, here it is, a formula. An accurate, calculatable formula. Calculatable, is that right? Sure. A calculable? I don't know. There has to be a formula that you can follow that does not change.
So you plug a team in and it gives you exactly what you need to know.
You say solve for X and you can find that answer every single time.
Yep.
No matter what the standard is. No matter what the situation is. No matter what the year is. But college football does not have that.
We're about to have to hit the break real fast, though. You talked about the happy medium, right? Let's play our hypothetical, our favorite what-if game.
Here we go.
Say that it is 8. Say 8 is the happy medium, right? Between 4 and 12.
For the playoffs.
For the playoff, yeah. Who are the deserving teams?
Right now?
Right now. You would say Oregon.
It's hard to say because you don't know what that standard is.
But based off of what we know. Based off of...
What do we know?
Very fair.
Oregon, Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame, unfortunately, Georgia... Yeah, I mean...
Exactly. But that's exactly my point. Even 8 teams is hard to name. So now the fact that you have 12 guaranteed, but 15 or 16 that have the arguments...
Yeah.
There's no answer.
You can make it 1,000 teams until you put some formula there. It doesn't matter because teams... There's always an argument for who gets in and who doesn't get in. And somebody... It's the same... The thing we've said the entire time... Somebody's going to be left out, and somebody's going to be upset.
March Madness bracket in college football coming up next.
We got to get to break. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, he joins us after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins. On ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Little delay in getting Chris Gordy. He's going to join us in just a few minutes. He is finishing up a work call, so he's going to be with us in just a few minutes when he is able to get wrapped up with that. And so while we wait on him, we look ahead to what we're going to talk about with him, which is conference championship games coming up this weekend, Christian. And you've got good ones, really good ones, but I can't help but... And we're probably at fault to this, but just watching these games and thinking, right? I mean, take the SEC championship game, for example. The winner, yeah, you get the automatic bye, but the loser is still...
The loser hosts in the
first
round.
That's what I was going to say. The loser hosts a playoff game. And which one would you rather have?
Obviously, you would rather have the bye. To give your team another, or to give yourself another week to get prepared to avoid a possible sort of upset, but oh no, we lost the SEC championship. Now we have to go play in arguably the biggest game on campus history.
Honestly, hot take here. Year one.
Would you rather lose it?
I think I'd rather lose it.
I think
I want the home playoff game. I mean, yes, it's an extra game and it's an extra week that you could have off and things like that. I know, and I know there's a lot. There's probably a lot more cons than there are pros.
But just from the standpoint of everything before the game or everything.
Yes, like, and what it would mean if you win. Like, I mean, just, it would be such, it's history too. Think about it that way. That's history. You could say in year one of this new playoff, you got to host the first round, the first college football playoff game ever in Sanford Stadium or in Happy Valley or in Austin or in Bloomington or wherever. I mean, South Bend, like, that's really, really cool. And I feel like, and I hate that it's this way, but this playoff is getting so watered down, it's getting poo-pooed on because of all the negatives, right? Because it's all the negatives about it.
Great on air.
It's legal.
No, I'm just saying, but like, for
someone, it's adult language.
For someone that uses words for a living.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic. Best I could come up with. But it's true, because the playoff, think about what we just talked about. All the cool stuff, that's a cool thing. All the really exciting parts of it are getting pushed to the side and overlooked because of all the negatives that we just had a whole segment about. And I hate that it's that way, but man, it's hard not to. It's hard to not look at what the bad parts are and why it's not working the way we want it to. But if we're able to, for a second, to highlight those positives, again, Chris Gordy's going to join us in just a few minutes. There are some really cool things about this playoff, and hosting first-round games on campus is one of them.
It's absolutely fantastic, and to think that it's going to be, I believe they're all one day, right? Or is it 2 days?
No, it's over. I think it's a Friday-Saturday. Okay. I think there's like 2 games on Friday and the rest are on Saturday.
That means
I
believe they changed that then, because I believe there was initial talks of it being like the 11 a.m. kick, a 2:30, a 6, and like an 8:30 or something along those lines. But
I'll double check, but I think I'm right. I think.
I'm pretty positive you are too, because I saw that it was a 19th and 20th games.
Yeah, Friday, December 20th. Oh, wait a minute, hold on. Yeah, I think it is that Friday, Saturday. Now, how do you feel about the second round being neutral site bowl games, like the neutral bowl games? Do you like that?
I do. I feel like you get the team that's the higher seed gets to host, and then you go to, I mean, a prestigious New Year's Six bowl game, right? I mean, imagine if you're...
But does that matter anymore? Does that carry the weight that it used to, a New Year's Six bowl? Like,
I don't think the New Year's Six title does anymore. I think the venues still do, right? I think that maybe certain ones, Pasadena, the Rose Bowl, I think still very much stands in arguably the best place to play in college football, right? But
fans would disagree.
Yes. But watching on TV, I would say it fits it. But I mean, I think it will be awesome to be able to host a first round game and then go somewhere like that. That being said, if you made it to where you hosted the first two rounds and then you didn't have to go to Louisiana to go play in the Superdome or whatever, that makes it a little bit different. But going back to, if you can name all of the negative things that we've been able to do, a positive thing, being able to have the first round on campus as a college football fan, regardless of your team is in or not, what a cool atmosphere that it's going to be at all of those stadiums. And it makes it to where if you're one of those smaller teams that doesn't necessarily get that much publicity, a team like Boise State, if they're able, or if they don't host the first round, or Arizona State even, if they play and they host a first round game, like, so much will come for that school.
The schedule for the college football playoff, the first round, there's a game on Friday night, December 20th. That is 15 days from now. 2 weeks from tomorrow is the first playoff game for college football. They're one game on Friday night and then 3 games on Saturday, back to back to back. So a triple header then on the 21st. That's the weekend.
So there still is that 11 a.m. kick then?
Yes. Yeah. 11. These are Eastern time. So for Central time, yes. 11, 3, and 7. So back to back to back.
Would that make it any worse of a feeling for you if say Auburn was in the college football playoff, if they got the 11 a.m. slate instead of the 7 p.m.?
That would suck.
I mean, not that you would complain about hosting a playoff game, because again, I guess teams like your teams in the Big 10 or Big 12, they're used to that big noon type kickoff. But what a weird game that would be, considering if Auburn goes and plays an 11 a.m. game, it's almost like, oh gosh, you're not playing good football.
Yeah, right, and like now, we always talk about how the road team has the advantage on an 11 a.m. kick. And yet you could be playing 11 a.m. in Happy Valley. You could be playing 11 a.m. in Clemson, South Carolina. You could be playing 11 a.m. in Tuscaloosa. I mean, I don't know.
Not that you would complain about being in it, but I think the time slot does
that would
play
water it down
a little bit of a weird factor and make it, I don't want to say not as special, but you can't tell me that Jordan Hare at 7 p.m. wouldn't be a little bit of a different vibe than Jordan Hare at 11 a.m.
Especially with these games. Think about this too, Christian. These are being played in December. I mean, you're going to have, it will happen, whether it's this year or years to come, when you're playing up north in Columbus, Ann Arbor, places like that, you're going to have snow games.
I was going to say, Tennessee might be going to Ohio State to play in the snow.
I mean, yeah, Miami or UCF could go and play in Ann Arbor and play in a foot of snow. Like, that is going to happen at some point. And whether you think that is fair, I don't know, and I don't care. That's how the NFL playoffs work. And one thing on that we're going to get to the phones, we got Chris standing by. I compare it to the NFL, right? Because I like how the NFL does wild card, quarterfinals and all that, where you go to the higher seed. I am in favor, however, of the AFC and NFC championship game. I do think that should be a neutral site. I think that's really tough to go and win a championship on the road. Now, you do it in all the other series in professional sports, I guess, but in terms of the college football playoff, just to give it some relation, I don't know. I would be okay with the second round games being on campus too, honestly.
I can see it. It just, I mean, again, it makes it to where if you are the higher seed, you're playing your conditions. I mean, that's why Buffalo doesn't play in a dome, because the Buffalo Bills play in the snow.
Which is stupid.
Three or four games of the year. And so when teams like Miami or San Francisco go up to Buffalo, Buffalo has an immediate advantage.
True. All right, hey, let's get to the phone lines. We've got our regular Thursday guest a couple of minutes later, but that is totally fine. We totally understand that life and business comes first. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. What's going on, Chris? How are you, man?
Yeah, sorry, man. I'm running a little late. I was on the phone with Lane Kiffin, who was just crying and whining about his resume and not getting into the playoffs.
What'd he call you for? He act like you have some kind of influence or something?
Oh, no. He's just willing to complain and moan to anybody who listens.
No, you're right about that. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about, is the college football playoff, the rankings that were released on Tuesday, the uproar that has been caused by that, and what it has, and I guess what the games this weekend, what their implications are in terms of the conference championship game. Summarize it for us if you can. I mean, it's just confusing, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, look, if it were me, I would not have put Alabama into that picture. I just feel like this Alabama team with three losses and two of them to 6-6 teams, I just think that negates any good wins you got. Yet the playoff committee sees the brand and the A and the crimson helmet, and they're infatuated with the brand, and I think that's going to bring eyeballs and dollars, and it probably will. I mean, I get it, but also, what, you know, the unspoken truth nobody wants to talk about is Miami also has a big brand. People would tune in to see Cam Ward and the Miami Hurricanes, yet they got dinged big time for a loss to Syracuse, who happens to be a ranked team this week, whereas Alabama lost 24-3 2 weeks ago in Norman, Oklahoma, to a bad Oklahoma team, and yet they get a pass for that. They also played a pretty poor game against the Auburn Tigers in the Iron Bowl last week, where they turned the ball over, what was it, four times, and if Auburn had any pulse of an offense, any other team with a pulse would have been able to score off those opportunities and probably beaten Alabama last week. Let's be real. So
thanks, Chris.
Nonetheless, Alabama gets the benefit of the doubt. They're in the catbird seat. And this weekend, if you don't want to see Alabama in, I think you root Clemson, because Clemson would get in as the ACC champ. And I still think SMU will have a good shot to maybe get in as a two-loss ACC team. But don't be surprised if this committee dings them 8 spots and moves Alabama up 2 spots, not playing anybody, because why not? They're Alabama.
Wouldn't that, but the conversation, and you know this, I mean, the argument to that, though, is if they do that, doesn't that just eliminate conference championship games and any importance that they have from here on out?
The only benefit, really, is that first-round bye. I mean, it's, you can make the same case for Georgia and Texas. I mean, everybody's saying Georgia's in no matter what, even if they lose. What if Texas wins 50-10? Does that three-loss Georgia team still deserve to be in? I mean, this is the problem with the SEC beating up on each other this year, that you've opened this door for them to be, you know, for three, you know, where you have to make a case for a three-loss SEC team that has its warts. You know, but also you look at some of these other conferences and the teams they play, and you can't really give a pass to a two-loss, you know, ACC team who wasn't really tested all year. So, I don't know. There's got to be something changed with the formula. I still think it's got to be more like the NCAA tournament in basketball, where you reward a team like South Carolina, who's on a 6-game win streak. You know, what do they always say is selection time, you know, for basketball? Like, oh, this team's red hot. You know, we got to move up to a 3 seed. Look at how they finish. Like, we do that in basketball, yet we can't do that in football. Yet in football, there's this weird thing where they're like, oh, head-to-head matters. We don't do that in basketball. They don't go, well, Auburn beat Kentucky back in, you know, on January 1st. So, you know, that one, we got to keep them. They won the head-to-head. Like, that doesn't matter when it comes to seeding in basketball. So, I don't know, man. I think you got to revamp the whole selection process because there's just too much smoke and there's too much inequity when it comes to conferences and their schedules. Texas played the 16th worst schedule in the SEC this year, dead last. Yet they are the top-ranked team because they weren't tested. Yet Georgia played how many top 25 teams? And I mean, it's just schedule inequities. And I get why Lane Kiffin's complaining. I get why Shane Beamer's complaining. But there's got to be more of an analytical thought process when it comes to the selection committee, and not just looking at, well, this team has more wins than this team, so they should be in. Yeah, but you got to look at everything else that goes with it.
Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC with us here on ESPN 106.7. We'll keep it short here today. I do want to get your thoughts on National Signing Day plus transfer portal. I mean, a team that you think won National Signing Day yesterday, a team that is getting more momentum, and then what the portal could look like when it opens up on Monday.
This was a big winner jumping up to number one. I mean, I know it doesn't mean anything really because, you know, Georgia, Texas, and Alabama all had elite recruiting classes, but it's something else for Texas to beat their chest, to be able to go sit in recruits' rooms or call transfer portal kids and say, hey, look, we just signed the number one recruiting class, and we just won the SEC, assuming they win the SEC title this weekend. Big advantage for Texas there. I thought Auburn, you know, hell of a class for Hugh Freeze. It was looking like it was going to be top five there for a while, but finishing with number six, and I'm going with the 24/7 composite. Whatever, you know, you can go on three if you want. LSU, for the loss of Bryce Underwood and then losing the DB who flipped to Texas, I thought they finished strong and got a flip of an offensive lineman, and for them to finish eighth was big. A&M, Mike Elko having the ninth best class was huge. And then how about Florida? You got to love what Billy Napier did these last couple weeks, and basically being dead man walking to saving his job and then taking that portal class from outside recruiting class from outside the top 25 to finish number 11. That was huge. So, yeah, big wins all around for the SEC yesterday.
Chris, we appreciate you, man. I know life gets crazy, and it's always fun to talk to you, even in limited spurts. How can people find you, what you have going on for the SEC championship game this weekend?
Yeah, we'll be doing our preview tomorrow, but, man, we are in full transfer portal mode, tracking all the portal moves. Obviously, Jackson Arnold and Connor Wegman, the two big headliners so far, but I'm told there is more to come next week in the portal from the SEC. So we'll have you covered, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcast.
Awesome, Chris. We appreciate you, man. We'll talk to you next week, and we'll have a lot of portal conversations then, all right?
Yeah, and tell that basketball team at Auburn to clean it up. Come on, what are we doing?
Oh, I'm sorry, where's Houston at?
I'm not a Houston fan. Hey, my wife, I was giving her crap the whole night when Kentucky was the only SEC team to lose. So, come on.
I mean, nobody else went to Cameron Indoor, okay? I mean, nobody else did that.
No, it's a good loss. It's a good loss.
It is, if that's a thing. All right, Chris, we appreciate it, man. Have a good one. That is Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. We appreciate him. Of course, they show the highlight on the TV in here as soon as he talks about it. Is ESPN timing a thing? Is radio timing a thing? I don't know. Anyway, Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. We appreciate him for joining us. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap it up on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We appreciate Chris Gordy joining us and Brad Law as well. Let's get to the phone lines one more time. We got to make it quick where we're going to get kicked out of here shortly. Bob, you're on the line. I got about 30 seconds for you, my man.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think it's time that we quit fooling ourselves and acting like there's four elite conferences. There's two elite conferences. One, that it's even better than the other one, being the SEC, is stronger than the Big Ten. But it's laughable to think that the Big 12 or the ACC is anywhere in comparison as difficult or as strong as the SEC or the Big Ten. And so losing a game or even two games in that conference is disqualifying in my judgment. And if SMU or even arguably Clemson were to play a schedule like Georgia, Oklahoma had, they would have four or five losses. I think anybody watching football would agree with that, but I'd like you to comment on that, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
Yep, thanks so much, man. We appreciate the call, and I think he's exactly right.
I think it goes back to the conversation of I don't think there will be automatic bids in a couple years, just because from that exact statement to make it to where if an ACC team has two or three losses but they win their respective conference championship, then you're automatically in the playoff, right? I mean, you make it to where the Big Ten this year at the top might be a little bit stronger than the SEC, but the bottom of the Big Ten is nowhere near the strength of schedule or the strength of whatever, the strength of the team from the bottom tier of the SEC. I mean, you hear about it for decades, and it continues going on right now to where, I mean, the SEC, you just beat yourself up from weeks 4 to week 12 into where if you even find your way out with one loss, you're really, really happy going through your conference schedule. You can't really say the same if you're playing necessarily in the ACC or the Big 12.
The reason that automatic bids work in college basketball from every conference is because there's a ton of teams that make it. And so when there's an upset, right, or a slightly above average team wins the conference, it's not detrimental to all the other conference attendees, to all the other conference members, right? I mean, that's why it works. When you have a team that makes a run during the conference tournament and they get the automatic bid, okay, congratulations, NC State. You won the ACC tournament, but Duke is still going to make the tournament as a high seed. That's why it works in college basketball.
And it goes right back to, again, what you're talking about, to where if NC State, for example, wins the ACC tournament or the ACC championship in the postseason, they don't get a one seed. Right? You can still win the tournament
and be an eight or a nine
yes. or even a 10 seed.
Right.
If you're going to keep automatic bids, make that the case. But
you
to
get
make
in.
It to where if you're SMU or say Clemson finds a way to beat SMU and now Clemson's automatically in, congrats. You're still in, but why are you guaranteed the fourth seed?
Yeah.
You can make it, but you're going to be the ninth or the 10th or even possibly the 11th or 12th seed to where you don't get rewarded just because you played in a conference and won the championship.
I'm with you. A lot more to come on that tomorrow. This person in the on-the-line text box on the way out says they will always change the target for the money. And I think that's exactly right. I think it's a moving target. Until there is a concrete formula that cannot be altered, that cannot be changed, the target will always be moved. All right, it's been a great show today. It flew by. Absolutely flew by. Thank you to Chris Gordy and to Brad Law, Christian Griffin as well. Also, before we get out of here, want to say thank you to our fall intern, Noah, who has been our producer this fall, has been answering phones, calling guests, taking care of us, making sure the show goes well. So, Noah, thank you for your services, my man. You did a fantastic job. We will definitely miss you, but you've been one of the better ones that we've had here at the station. So, thank you for that, and appreciate everybody being a part of the show today. Stick around, a shortened drive. All right, the drive's going to be live for like 40 minutes. Good enough for them to talk a little basketball, and then Auburn women's basketball is here on ESPN for the ACC SEC Challenge. Auburn women taking on Virginia. Britt Bowen has the call right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Dylan Cardwell's Tiger Takes interview will be tomorrow, okay? They'll tell you more about it. We'll be back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN. For Christian Griffin, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.